Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Kurt Bresnitz. Kurt was born in Vienna, Austria in 1918, where his parents ran an import-export business. His father wanted him to take over the business, so he spent much of his academic life studying in commercial schools. And in March of 1938, Kurt was 18 and looking forward to graduating in the summer. But his life was about to change forever.
Our president in Austria, when I was 18 years old, was Kurt Schuschnigg, who in early 1938 was cited by Hitler to come to Berlin. He was giving an ultimatum from Hitler to either turn peacefully over Austria or invade Austria. Schuschnigg came back from that conference, and he asked the Austrian people to give him a vote of confidence and to decide whether Austria should become a part of Germany or whether the independence of Austria should be maintained. There were signs all over Vienna that said for Schuschnigg, with a free Austria, and all the patriots came out and vote was supposed to be rendered on March the 13th of 1938. Well, when Hitler found out that there might be resistance, he decided to master his army, and on the 12th of March, cannons and the machine guns and the troops started to invade Austria. Unexpected, some of the Nazi followers in Austria already had their brown shirts on, and there were German flags flying over the town. The first thing that the Nazis occupied was the railroad station, the radio station, the parliament, and Schuschnigg was put under house arrest. The following day, all foreign papers, the newspaper was abolished, and so were organizations that were not military or politically affiliated with the regime were eliminated. I used to be a Boy Scout leader, and Boy Scouts were absorbed by the Hitler Youth.
How were they absorbed?
Pardon?
How were they absorbed when you say that?
They were eliminated. And I had a very wonderful young lady as my friend. She was blonde and blue-eyed and an Aryan. And since I was of Jewish faith, I became all of a sudden an outcast. And at the following day, the German soldiers blocked whole blocks of streets, arrested Jewish people, and made them grab the sidewalks and the walls of the houses that advertised the upcoming vote of the people for Schuschnigg with lie on and forced them to eliminate anything that had to do with the previous regime. My girlfriend, of course, could not continue the friendship with me, and we were separated. And in school, the Jewish kids had to be in the last row of the room. The professor was welcomed with the Heil Hitler greeting, and about 3 months before graduation, my final exams for the academy, I was ousted from the school altogether.
What was that like? Do you remember
how you felt? It was a terrible blow to me, and I was issued a yellow armband with a Jewish star on it, so that I was marked as an outcast and not wanted by... I was not Austrian anymore. I was an Israelitish follower and an outcast of Germany.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Kurt Bresnitz was 18 when Germans invaded Austria. Here he describes the collapse of his community and his life.
How were you treated by the kids in the school after this Hitler takeover?
You had to belong to the party in order to be recognized. You either were for it or you were against the regime. If you didn't have the brown shirt uniform with the swastika on it, you were immediately arrested and interrogated. All my friends were here today and gone tomorrow. Either they went underground, or they fled, or they didn't show their faces on the street. Whatever I had to go out on the street, I had a little handbag with me. I said goodbye to my parents because I never knew whether I would come home, and I had a little in the satchel, a little kit with essentials, with underwear and toilet articles, just in case I would not come back and say goodbye to my parents.
So every day you left, you had to face the prospect of not coming home.
Exactly. Then I also saw terrible things. Hitler had his birth on the 20th, and there were big celebrations all over, and people marching on the streets, and Jewish homes and shops were invaded and all marked. What was so tragic was, for instance, a big celebration of all Jewish literature, books of any kind, were publicly stacked on the street and put on fire with the great jubilation of the crowd around it. Also, all Jewish shops were marked with a Morgan David, the Jewish star, and Nazis posted in front of the Jewish shops, prohibiting people to enter the shop. I saw people coming out of the synagogue being poured on with hot tar as they left the place of worship. I saw Jewish men dragged to the Danube with a big crowd shouting. They were held underneath the water in the icy. It was in March. The Danube was still frozen over. They dug a little hole and put the Jew inside and held him under the water until he almost died. It was an unreal situation. And you had your friends one day and you could not contact them anymore. The press, of course, was completely eliminated, and only Nazi propaganda papers were issued that were full of lies in order to find how the outside world reacted to the thing. You had to turn in on the BBC in London to get news of value. And of course, as soon as the regime found out, they forced their agents into the Jewish homes and confiscated any shortwave radios.
How old were you?
I was at the time 19 years old.
And you witnessed them pouring hot tar on other people and these atrocities.
Yes. Unbelievable things happened. One day you had friends, and the next day they were gone. And anybody that had anything to do with Jews was aiding and abetting Jews and was automatically arrested. Going on the street with the Jewish star and yellow armband, I was spit on and I was hit, and I could not defend myself because otherwise I would be deported immediately. My father always said, during that time, he said, don't speak too loud because the walls have ears. And every house had a superintendent that reported immediately if there was something going on that was suspicious.
Thanks for tuning in to the Immigrant Stories program. Kurt Bresnitz is describing how quickly and drastically life changed when Hitler invaded Austria. The inhumanity of fascism was destroying any semblance of his former life.
Life was made impossible, and one day, to top it off, a German soldier came into our home, and he presented with army papers to serve in the German army, but as a young man of Jewish faith, I was not permitted to carry a gun for the German fatherland, so to speak, but to work in the labor corps and dig trenches in the front rows without being able to defend myself.
So digging trenches on the front lines.
Yes. Under the circumstances, my father gave a lot of his wealth to a Nazi official that took money under the table, and he presented me with falsified army release papers. As soon as I had these papers, I said goodbye to my parents and my sister, and I went underground. The strange thing about it is that the Nazis in Austria were more fanatic than the Nazis in Germany. And I knew a family that harbored some Jewish people, and I stayed underground. In September of 1938, I still had a chance to get out of Austria because the concentration camps were not extermination camps at that time. All they were interested is to get the Jewish people out of where they were natives of, and to purify the German blood. So, make a long story short.
I have a question though. Why were the Austrians more fanatical than the Germans?
Because it was a new thing, and the military and the political people were all concentrating. They were fed all that one channel information through papers, through radio, they were brainwashed, all of them. And those that weren't Nazis had to become Nazis in order to exist, to continue their trade. Before I left came the Kristallnacht, which is famous for its atrocities that were committed. People smashed with rocks the show windows of German merchants. They had big demonstrations on the streets. And I want to tell you that my uncle was one of the leading jewelers in Vienna. He was very close to the opera house and the old part of the city, and he was very well known throughout. Because of that, he not only had the most outstanding gems of the world, but he also had the trust of the manufacturers who wanted to have window to the public, and he had a lot of merchandise that were left on consignment because of his wonderful reputation. And after the Kristallnacht, There was nothing left. They robbed everything he had out of the show window, and they appointed a Nazi to run the business. And what was inside and untouched was taken away by the Nazi supervisor. And of course, my uncle was under terrible pressure because some of the world's gems were in his position on loan, and everybody wanted to have his money back. And under the pressure, he gave, and he decided to commit suicide with his wife. He was very close to my family, and all my other relatives, some of them in Bratislava, perished in concentration camps. I lost contact with them. So those were terrible, terrible times.
Thanks for listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Kurt Bresnitz has just described Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass. It was the Nazis' declaration of war against German and Austrian Jews. After that, Kurt realized that he had to flee. He left Vienna and went to Hamburg, where he slept on the docks and tried desperately to get a ticket to the United States. Finally, in late September of 1938, he got a ticket on a German ship called the Columbus, bound for America.
Okay. And I came to the United States, and believe me, I never have cried before, but I was so overwhelmed when I saw the Statue of Liberty on American soil that I started to cry. I came to the United States with $8 in my pocket. That was all you could bring on your body.
Describe that day for me. You said you cried, but can you remember the day that you came into the
harbor? I can remember the day very, very well. I was picked up by a cousin of mine who worked in New York, and I told him how overwhelmed I was, and he said, "Kurt, I can't take you with me. I have to go back to my workplace." He gave me $20, and he said, "Go and get yourself a good dinner and meet me in the evening at my home." I was left by myself, and I went to a cafeteria, and I splurged and had a really nice meal because I didn't eat very much. I didn't want to be known on the German ship, because as long as you're on a German ship, you're on German soil. And I was afraid that they're going to find out that I come on falsified army release papers. I only ate in my cabin and didn't want to show my face too much. But all of a sudden, there I was on American soil in New York, all by myself. First thing is I got a good meal. And the second thing was that I discovered the jungle of New York, and I was overwhelmed by the sight of skyscrapers. And I stayed 2 days with my relative in New York, and then continued to Cincinnati. I was with my uncle in Cincinnati, who came to America in 1920, and he started out as a newspaper boy, and he became very well-to-do, and he ended up as the owner of one of the large department stores in Cincinnati. After about 2 weeks of being in Cincinnati, not only did I meet my wife there, who also came over from Nuremberg, and we were together in a club that was called the Gate Club, that was specially organized for newcomers to the United States to Americanize them. I Americanized myself pretty soon. Later on, when I volunteered into the American Army, but during the time of...
So you met her within 2 weeks of being in Cincinnati?
Yes. And after 2 weeks, I got all of a sudden a letter from the German consulate in Cincinnati, and it says to immediately report to this thing. And I without any giving any reason, and I went to the police, and I showed the chief the letter, and he read it, and in front of my eyes, he tore it up, threw it in the waste paper basket, and says, "Don't you dare to even come close to the German consulate, because you would be immediately sent back and end up in a concentration camp, because apparently they had found out that you entered the United States without proper documentation." So that saved my life. And in 1941, I decided to volunteer in the army. I was assigned to the Infantry Division 1st Battalion, and I was discharged in 1945. And while being in the army in the 1st Infantry, I worked up to get appointed to an American military government, and I was assigned to duties as interpreter and court reporter. And I was also on underground missions in special assignments. I think the highlight of my army career was when Patton came up to rescue the troops in Belgium. I was assigned to Patton's command, and I was in Tirlemont in Belgium, and was there during the advance of the Germans. That was the time where we lost quite a bit of our people, died in the...
What battle was that?
The Battle of the Bulge. Yes.
You said that you had some underground assignments.
Yes.
What were those?
The underground assignments were, first of all, I was in on the arrest of Göring. Second of all, I was in on the opening of Dachau concentration camp and interrogation of some of the natives in Dachau, which was an important assignment that was very heartbreaking.
You were one of the initial troops to go in and open up Dachau?
Yes, that was a very, very heartbreaking thing. Dachau was not extermination camp, but only for a short time. I went to interrogate some of the natives of Dachau. It was very interesting because they had in their home the statue of Mary. And we were very religious Catholics. And I told them, I said, how could you live in a town so close to concentration? And they said, we didn't know anything about extermination camps. We thought it was a prison camp. And that was all that we were aware of. And I said, well, didn't you smell the smell of burned flesh? And they said, no, we weren't aware of that. And besides, they said, we don't know anymore what is truth and what is not truth. First, the Germans brainwashed us, and I think that what you're telling us is propaganda, American propaganda. They didn't want to accept that. And Germans can't be so rude and so inhuman to do such a thing. So we were shorthanded to clean up the concentration camp and thing. So we told them that we were going to give them, if they help us clean up the concentration camp, we'll give them the opportunity. And they did. And they fainted when they saw what they saw.
That was Kurt Bresnitz. Kurt earned 5 Bronze Stars for his service in the U.S. Army. After the war, he joined his wife Lata in New York, where he studied to be a jeweler. In 1948, he and Lata moved to Denver, and 2 years later, they moved to Aspen. Lata went to work as a nurse at the Aspen Valley Hospital, and Kurt opened his jewelry store. They both lived a long life of service to their communities and raised 2 wonderful children. Kurt died in November of 2016 at the age of 98. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. If you'd like to listen to other stories, you can access our archives, immigrantstories.net or kdnk.org. Stories are also available on Facebook and on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and heed the warning signs.
Son c'è margriata da bot e da tutte la pren pietigot. Pietigotti mio bien signun e pietigotti mia buona caldera. Pietigot mia buona panaia. Pietigot mia buona fuenetta. Che io durme Perciai fasquai miu bien pasto, pietigot mius bunnas vacettus, fus vinis asci giardillat. Ah, pietigot dentuon e dentuon, sapit eus curiet.